C1PH. Number 8A.
I have been asked about the further program of these talks, and it seems that quite a few would like me to stop with the talks after the June meeting. And with some good reason, they feel that they have got so much during this winter that they would like to make it their own and to ponder it. Then there are quite a few who wrote to me that whatever I do, I shouldn't stop and should go on. That now we have seen something which is new to many thoughts, and that we should nurture it. So here is the human situation, and what we'll do is this, that I would like to finish today the chapter, and I think I will be able. I didn't believe it would. And next time I try to go through the chapter Footsteps of Truth. It's a long chapter, but perhaps if we do it as today with our epitomes, we would be able to do it in one weekend. But in case I would feel next time that I would have to hurry too much the subject, then I would consider coming for another single session somewhere in October or so to finish it, so that I feel definitely that I would like to finish the Christ chapters before I make a break. But then I feel also very definitely that I would like to make a longer break, however the term long, whatever the term long means. But at least I would say for a year or so. This is something which I cannot really reason out rationally, but it's very irrational in my thought. And that's more important. I feel that a break may be right for you and mainly also for me. And there are many things I would like to do during that so-called sabbatical year, which will be a very working year. All right. So anyway, we will meet next time in June, and we'll start at 2 o'clock at this time. Now, we come to the second part of physiology. When reading the whole chapter through, somehow one can't help feeling that the melody changes after this first part, and that a new aspect on physiology is opening up, namely the aspect that there is a body, but a quite a different body than the physiological body. Namely, that man is the embodiment of God. So while the first part was showing that an understanding of God bestows dominion over the physical body, we come in the second part to the realization that if we wake out of the dream of having a physical body, that we begin to realize the nature of the new body, namely the idea, man. So that the second part is all about that awakening that is taking place to realize that man is but idea. So I have epitomized the second part, that an understanding of God is the true embodiment of man. Now we must see that this second part is not similar to the Christianity chapters, which we have not yet taken, creation, signs of being especially, where man is also being presented as the idea of God. Here, it is only the awakening to the fact that man is the idea of God, is the embodiment of God. It's the awakening. It isn't by chance that Mrs. Eddy just has taken out of the whole Bible just this very verse with which she ended the first part. She took just that out which would build the bridge to understand the second part, namely that if we awake in thy likeness, that if we behold thy face in righteousness, I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. And the second part is a sense of gradual awakening and awakening that man is not physiological, but that man's body is the embodiment of God. So it is a transitional stage, which then over the chapter on Footsteps of Truth leads to the final form of man as the infinite idea of God when we come to the chapter on creation. So we can't expect here yet that we will get a final picture of man, much more again the practical steps that consciousness takes in order to awake to that new structure of consciousness. The first subject, mind, I have summarized by saying, by apprehending that brain is not the basis of intelligence, the fact dawns on human thought. You see, it's again the dawning, and it is really in proportion as, by apprehending, it dawns. It dawns on human thought that the divine mind is the only intelligence. Perhaps when at home you do some study on this chapter, it may be interesting to compare the correlative subjects of the first and second part. See, in the first part, she also started in mind with that concept that it is false to believe that man is just as big as the size of his brain, that the size of the cranium determines how much man we are, and so on. Now, there she only began to show that we should turn away from that physiological belief that intelligence is in brain. Now, we awake really to the fact that mind is the only intelligence. Can you see? It's a higher sense. It's really lifting us out of the physiological sense and showing what are we then if we are not a physiological proposition. What are we then? So here she gives a sense that through apprehension, something is dawning. And what is dawning is that brain is not the seat of intelligence, but that the seat of intelligence is the divine mind. This subject has 7 subtones, but I think I'm not going to take them, because I feel I just want to give an overall picture of the second part. It's so easy, the text, that it will not give you any difficulties. So it doesn't really matter if I don't take it. I just can quickly summarize it in my own words, what she has said here, just to give the feel of the tone. She says here, well, brain cannot cognize mind. Brain cannot even cognize an idea. see, she starts right away again that with the old structure of consciousness, which rests on rational thinking, we cannot fathom the subject of Christian Science. It's just not possible, because brain cannot fathom an idea. We think that with our brain we can do it, because that brain is so intelligent that it can think in abstract concepts, but it cannot grasp ideas. Ideas have their seat in mind. They come from mind. And therefore only the divine mind can grasp idea. We should never forget that. It's no use to read the Christian Science textbook with an ordinary, intelligent approach. We thought that if we would read it intelligently, we might grasp it. We can't. We get the philosophy, which we may like, which we might be nice, which may suit us, but it is a philosophy. It's not spiritual science. Only when mind, capital M, cognizes its own ideas, then we have the letter and spirit one. Then we touch reality. That's a new integrated consciousness. So, here, it's first an awakening to it. Awakening which says, oh, this brain, what this brain can do. After all, we begin to realize today that it is just functioning with electricity and that it can be measured with electrical instruments, how it works and so on, and we can control that brain and therefore the thought through electrical impulses and so on. So what's that brain? If it is subject now, instead of the size of the cranium as in Mrs. Eddy's time, now it is subject to electrical impulses. See, today, Mrs. Eddy wouldn't write this chapter and say that we measure the intellectual capacity according to the size of the cranium. That was a belief that is about 100 years old. Nobody, no physiologist would believe that. He would say, oh, no, you can't measure that. That's humbug. You can measure the intelligence of a man according to the electrical impulse and so on, and you can measure it. It's a different language, it's a different theory. But both are as incorrect, one as incorrect as the other. Mind is the seat of intelligence. And we have to awake to that fact, that mind, capitalized, alone, can give us an apprehension of idea. Therefore, it's awakening to set aside mortal mind and human thinking, and be one with that mind which is God, and to acknowledge no other mind but that mind which is God, and to work out from that standpoint. That's the awakening that takes place in the first place here. So that with that mind which is capitalized and is the only mind, we can recognize the likeness of God, man. Only with that mind we see the likeness of God. And seeing in that light of mind, he says, everything will be transformed, point of soul. That transforms. That gives us quite a different view on the whole universe. And showing that all volition is in that mind, that there is no human volition. That mind capitalized is all volition, the basis of immortality, life, casting out all errors, truth, and sending forth the atmosphere of intelligence, love, the complete spreading out, the complete penetration of the whole universe by the one mind. See, in this way, we begin to realize that if we awake in thy likeness, then in thy light we shall see only light. What a wonderful human experience we would have if we would accept that only that which mind knows is true knowing. But that is left to the next chapter. In the next chapter, she will pick it up there and show, therefore, that if we have the divinity of God, we have the true humanity of God. And that true humanity is really true divinity. So, here, thought is being prepared to accept then the next chapter. Then we go to the subject of spirit, the main subject of spirit, which I have summarized by saying that trusting spirit alone, the spiritual idea of man embodies the strength and omnipotent spirit. If you compare that with the first part, there in the first part, you remember, we had also the reliance on spirit. That in the first part, spirit said, only through radical reliance on spirit, we can regain paradise, the control of mind over matter. Here it is by that trust in the only spirit, we embody the spirit. See, quite different. It's no more that we gain dominion over the body, but that we are the very substance of the idea of spirit, the strength of spirit. Here she shows how, therefore, within us can be established that strength of spirit, which is healing, which is the healing power. This subject here is also in seven subtones, which I am not going to take one by one. I just will summarize it in my own words so that you get the feel of it. All that you need or I want to give is the feel of the chapter. And then you can study it by yourself. So here we begin to realize that if we awake in thy likeness, therefore if we awake in the light of spirit, and trust spirit, rely spirit, that then in that light we shall see light. Then in that spirit we shall be the strength of spirit. We will be the spiritual power that heals. So here she shows again how we have to quit human opinions, that we should trust spirit, that by trusting spirit, we have not a blind force, but an ordered force. See, trusting on matter is trusting always disorder. We forget that. That natural science says that the basis of the material universe is perfect disorder, not order. Only when we look at it through a only in a big way, we feel that there is order in the universe. But the deeper we go into matter, the more we see that the foundation is disorder. In nature, everything happens by chance, not by law. Everything is chance. So trusting matter is going into the realm of chance and disorder. But trusting spirit is trusting the only order there is. It's an ordered force and therefore will handle the disorder of mortal mind. Then she goes on and says, therefore, by putting all into spirit, we embody the spiritual idea. We embody the spiritual power. And by embodying the spiritual power, this power is healing. And she gives that a case of healing in which she says and shows that her realization of the trust in spirit that that realization without doing anything just was healing that hip disease. It was resurrecting the man out of his death valley, that it was restoring him in truth, giving him back his health, and finally that it proved that man coincides with the idea of man. That man coincides with the idea of man. So that we begin to realize that man is a spiritual idea. We awake to that. How big that idea is, she doesn't say. But in the chapter on creation, then, she will tell us all about that. The bigness of the idea, the bigness of the idea of man. That, then, is a tremendous broadening out. Here, it's just the awakening for us. The realization that if we trust spirit, that then, within us, the idea of spirit, the strength of spirit, is built up, and that that strength of spirit is the healing power. We come to soul. You have seen something very clear, that this subject on mind and spirit, which we just have taken, have 7 subtones, and that the further subjects don't have subtones. They may have, but I haven't seen them. They may have not. Well, I just didn't want to force anything. I don't like to force a conclusion. Here in soul, she gives the further awakening by showing that by exchanging the education of human belief with spiritual understanding, the bodily conditions changes. Changes too, I could say. It shows here that in the measure as we exchange the education of human belief, and exchange it for what? For spiritual understanding. That is not just a change of consciousness. That every change of consciousness brings a change of the bodily condition. That we can't change consciousness and not have an outward manifestation of that consciousness. Because you know that in being, the subject and the object are identical, that they are one. They are not separate things. You can't have a subject and separate from it an object. That's an old concept of the rational age, which is falling today. Modern science sees, like physics sees, that the observer is just as important as the object observed. And that the way of observing the object changes the object. That the way you observe, say, the atom, you change the atom. That's why you can see the atom either as a quantum, or you can see it as energy, as a wave. Just as you look at it. It is like... No, I don't go in that. But this is very indicative, you see, that this new discovery in physics should come at the same time in human history when one began to see that the inward attitude is determining the outward manifestation, like in psychology, like in Christian Science. That which we inwardly have as consciousness is showing forth itself and projecting itself forth on the outward, on the object. So here we awake now to the fact that if we want to change the human and the bodily conditions, we have to change our consciousness and nothing else. She gives here that very well known case of Kaspar Hauser. This isn't just one funny story, which he has read somewhere in the paper, like another 2,000 cases. That story of Kaspar Hauser in the medical science is a very well-known story. And there exists, out of his time, thousands of pages on the interrogation of that case, and modern books on medicine usually mention this case. Only recently I had a new book in my hands, and that case of Caspar Hauser was again brought up, because it's one of the typical cases which at his time, I don't know when exactly it was, but it was at the beginning of the 19th century, that at his time it overthrew all the physiological theories. Namely, it proved that the education of the human mind and the human belief determines your state, your bodily state. Because he was living, since he was a babe, up to the age of 17, he was living in a dungeon where neither sight nor sound reached him. He only had some crusts to eat. The light was unknown to him. And so he lived under conditions which we would call are absolutely abnormal and would lead to sickness and unhappiness. But he was very healthy and very happy. And when he was brought out of that dungeon into the light pained him, the sound pained him, the food they had given him pained him, everything turned the other way around. And he asked to be brought back to his dungeon, to that state of belief in which he was educated. So one can educate a human in any belief and he will be happy, and we can educate a human in any belief and he can be unhappy. Just a matter of education, not of the surrounding, not of what he's eating, seeing and hearing and so on. And this case brought to the conclusion that it is really that material sense is but the belief formed by education alone. See again what I said about the undeveloped country. We have to see that these people who are living in undeveloped country, that they are not suffering under a physiological backward state, but they are suffering under a backward educational state. And I don't want to say that, to go into politics. I think the general line is quite clear what I want to say. That if we give to everybody the same educational surrounding, the same educational possibilities, we'll no more have differences in races in the way of different degrees of intelligence and so on and so on and so on. That this is the clue for one mankind, for one world. Principle. By forsaking materialistic knowledge for metaphysical science, mortal mind grows out of itself. See again, this is the true awakening, this is the true evolution. The evolution lies not in seeing that the body evolves, but that the human mind changes and evolves. That the human mind is willing to take on a higher structure of consciousness. That therefore, in the measure as we are leaving behind materialistic knowledge and turn to a higher knowledge, to metaphysical science, that in that measure really mankind will make a big step forward.